with over 25 years of experience integrating mental health and spirituality, the author of Reclaiming Authenticity, When Ancestors Weep, and Redeeming the Bereaved. Here is Dr. James Houck.
Good evening, everybody, or wherever you are in the world at this time. Welcome to Reclaiming Authenticity, reclaiming that which has always been in you. Very excited to be with you here today and every broadcast that I do. I'm always a joy to spend this hour with one another. And I'm here every other Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And as I said in the past, each and every broadcast is dedicated to the integration of our spirituality and our mental health. And I place this integration all within the context of our relationships, the relationship that we have with ourselves, the relationship that we have with others, and certainly our relationship with God or the divine. I am Dr. James Houck, and if you would like more information about me, or if you want to leave me your comments about tonight's show, please visit www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. That's www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. And if you would like to call in and be part of the show, I invite you to do that. The number is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And I'll be taking your calls after the break. Now, all of these broadcasts that you sit and listen to are podcasted. In case you want to go back and listen again, or if you want to go back into the archives and listen to previous shows that you may have missed, just click on the archives button on the website, and you'll find this and other shows you might want to listen to again. And certainly anything that you would like to hear or have me talk about related to the integration of mental health and spirituality, just, again, drop me a few lines at www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. Well, many things going on. Welcome to the month of August. Here we are, August the 2nd, and where is the summer going? It's kind of interesting now. Last week, the kids and the teenagers that I counsel, they were still, caught up in the summer. You know, they still had a lot of summertime left to go on vacation and just go to the pool or whatever it is they want to do. But I guarantee you, by the end of this week, as in Friday and Saturday, they're going to change their tune. You know, it's almost as if they changed the calendar, and now they're going to be worried about back-to-school shopping, and especially with those little guys and girls who are making the transition from, let's say, elementary school to middle school, or middle school to high school, or high school to college. Those who are making that transition start to feel it, and they start to have a little bit of anxiety. They start to question whether or not they're going to be able to do that, or whether or not they're going to be able to make friends, or what's the new school going to look like. And they often forget that they have some orientation days coming up that actually walks them through and answers all their questions. So, but that'll be another shift that takes place a week after school begins, when I get them, sitting down with them again and say, well, how was the first day? They tell me all about it. They're excited. They talk to me about all their friends that they have made and so on and so forth. And I kind of remind them that they were nervous for no reason at all, as everything was going to work out just fine, that they too have a lot of resiliency. Well, there is one plaque that hangs in my office, and I put it there specifically so I can look at it every day. And it talks about the courage to change. talks about transitions and having the courage to change. And it reads, "It takes a tremendous amount of courage and inner strength to change from what is known and comfortable to something which is new and fresh. And that which is unknown often contains our greatest potential. That to seek our potential by risking change is the path of true greatness." And I like that third line there. "And that which is often unknown often contains our greatest potential." And it is quite thrilling when we begin to see that potential in ourselves, let alone potential in others. And by all means, certainly having the permission to be able to speak that potential to somebody else, to speak those things which we see in another person. And, you know, it does take courage, because many times we want to hang on to the past because we can't imagine something better in our lives, or let alone discovering who we really are. Because this involves us letting go of such things as previous attitudes and perceptions that no longer serve us, and they often keep us wounded. And as we let go, we then take on something better, something more life-giving, something more authentic to who we truly are. Well, you know me, if you've been listening to me for a while, that at the beginning of these broadcasts, I always like to share with new audience members where I'm coming from in terms of what exactly is reclaiming authenticity. Well, it basically comes from a deep-seated belief that I carry with me. I don't remember how old I was. I was fairly young at the time, but it's a deep-seated belief nonetheless that all of us come into this world already equipped and graced with everything that we need in this life, you know, in terms of our skills or our talents, our giftedness, our strengths, our character traits, and so forth. And how we live our giftedness and our talents and our strengths and character traits is in and through various relationships and the roles that we take on as we get older. Because you see, it doesn't matter who we are, or even quite frankly, where we were born in the world, or into what family we were placed, because we are social beings. Ours is a world full of relationships. And as social beings, we often spend our lives trying to make sense of our world by trying to find our place in the world. You know, where do I fit? Who fits with me? And so on and so forth. And as social beings, it's often within the context of our relationships that we end up experiencing at times tremendous pain and suffering. And these could be anything from acts of betrayal or cruelty that somebody has inflicted against us, or maybe vice versa, to simply being in the wrong place at the wrong time. And as a result, that many people bear now the scars of the physical, psychological, emotional, and spiritual wounds. And yet, this is what I see as the great irony of life, that how often we receive our deepest physical, emotional, psychological, even spiritual wounds in relationships. That the tragedy is that how often do we go along in life, and perhaps due to some unpleasant experiences, we tend to hide the very best parts of ourselves. We tend to hide our giftedness, or we might push down our passions or our skills or our uniqueness. We push them way down so that others cannot see it. All because we were told that, you know, one day we would never amount to anything, or that we would never measure up to another person's standards, or whatever other voice we heard telling us that there's really nothing special to you. And yet, here's the irony, we can discover our greatest healing, our strength, our peace, our forgiveness, and love through healthier relationships. And to be quite honest, these relationships just might be within our own families where we experience that woundedness or healthiness. It could just be right with our coworkers and our friends. Because when we are in relationship with others, once we are transformed, once we are healed and being healed, we are also going to transform others on one degree or another by our presence, by the grace that we have received and our understanding. And since we are healing and seeing ourselves differently, we will inevitably begin to see others differently and treat one another differently. But first, forgiveness and kindness and compassion begin with how we treat ourselves. Because whenever we are compassionate with ourselves, we then find we can be compassionate with others. And when we are more forgiving with ourselves, we then can be more forgiving of others. And when we're able to live in gratitude with ourselves, we then discover how this opens our hearts to see and live in gratitude with others. So all in all, transformation, first and foremost, begins with us. And this is actually what reclaiming authenticity is all about. Reclaiming that which has always been in you. Or, as the theologian Richard Rohr puts it, your true self is who you are and always have been in God. Now, echoing this sentiment, one of my teachers, Joseph Ryle, in his most recent book, Becoming Medicine, Pathways to Initiation into Living Spiritually, he writes that the way you become a medicine person is you practice who you are because you are already medicine. Nobody gives it to you. You are already it. You are already medicine. And what a gift, to yourself and to the world when you realize you are already medicine for others. Our responsibility then is that we have to work on clearing out everything that gets in the way of that medicine, that gets in the way of that giftedness, the uniqueness in terms of our unresolved emotional or psychological, physical, and even spiritual wounds. In fact, there is so much more to us than what we have become so far. And that's another shade of what reclaiming authenticity is all about. It takes courage to reclaim that which has always been in you. Well, I will certainly be taking calls in the second half of the show today, and I encourage you to call into the show because I want to get your heart's meditation, let's say, on tonight's subject. When giftedness blooms. When giftedness blooms. So I hope that your heart is doing okay today, and I hope that wherever you are today, you are safe and that you are at peace. Well, let's begin tonight's topic with one of my favorite stories about the integration and the process of spiritual growth and mental health, because certainly it is a process. Well, once upon a time, a spiritual master was walking with one of his students, and they were discussing the process and depth of spirituality. The young student was troubled because, as many students are from time to time, he was starting to grow impatient with what he perceived as his lack of spiritual progress. And who among us haven't been there? You see, in his mind, he believed he ought to be further along in his path for his search for truth. I mean, he studied hard, he did everything his teacher asked him to do, but he still felt as though he should be further along. Well, at one point in their walk, the master and the student came to a beautiful garden of roses. The master smiled as he pointed out the numerous colors and fragrances of the roses, each in their various stages of development. And the student, unfortunately, didn't fully understand what the master's point was in this lesson. Because, yes, everybody out there, every moment in our lives is a teachable moment for us. All the more reason we have to pay attention. Anyway, The master saw that his student was not understanding the lesson, so the master picked a rose that was just in the early stage of its bloom. Now he handed the rose to his student and asked him to open it. Now the student looked curiously at the rose and then back at his teacher and then back to the rose, and then he proceeded to use his two fingers to gently push the rose petals open. Now, to the student's surprise, the rose did not hold its shape, and it started to fall apart and didn't resemble any of the other beautiful roses that were already in full bloom. In fact, when he was done, many of the petals had fallen to the ground, and the rose was ruined. The master gently smiled as he took the rose back from his student. And he told his student that you cannot force roses to bloom because they bloom in their own time. And someday he too will bloom in God's time and grace. And even though there are some roses that are still in their buds and have yet to bloom, they are still roses because they are connected to their roots. They are anchored firmly in the ground, receiving all the water and nourishment from the sun and the soil. And, of course, when roses have opened and are in their full bloom, the fragrance is enjoyed by all because they have reached a point of maturity. Well, the student finally understood this lesson, and therefore, basically, his role then was to continue in his awareness, continue in his studies, continue in the faithful integration of his knowledge and personal experiences, and to continue to discover his giftedness, his hachiatos, that uniqueness, what was really special about him. And he was also to continue to develop his skills. And above all, he was to continue to stay anchored in his roots, to his faith, to his spiritual foundation. And by trusting in God's grace and over time, he too would blossom. Well, if we're honest with ourselves, I mean, how often do we get caught up in the hurry up to bloom stage? And we forget that even in a budding stage, we are growing. And if we're faithful to integrating our spiritual practices and experiences, along with our daily awareness of truth and God's grace, transformation is inevitable. This is something that I just really made it the point to get across to my students when I was teaching and training others to go on to become licensed therapists, you know, because they wanted to be able to acquire the skills immediately. And I would say, you know, you have to integrate. You have to integrate that which you're learning with who you are, your own experiences, your own transformation of the truth, and your work on yourself. But the more faithful you are to your own integration of all of these and more, transformation is inevitable. It will happen sooner or later. Well, if you were or are a fan of the TV series Grey's Anatomy, there's a quote in Season 6, Episode 12, whereby Meredith, she does a little bit of a narration. She talks about her perspective as a surgeon in the healing process of her patients. And she says, "In surgery, the healing process begins with a cut, an incision, the tearing of flesh. That as surgeons, we have to damage the healthy flesh in order to expose the unhealthy. It feels cruel and against common sense, but it works. You risk exposure for the sake of healing. And when it's over, once the incision has been closed, you wait. You wait and you hope that your patient will heal in time." I've always loved that quote, and it is certainly true in my life as of lately, because I had a knee replacement surgery done coming up on 3 weeks ago. And it is true. You have to dig out the old and put in the new, get a new knee. And now that it's all closed up, it's a matter of strengthening the muscles and the ligaments and tendons, and you wait, and you wait, and you wait. But there is healing that's taking place on the inside, even if we can't tell from the outside. You keep waiting, and healing is ongoing. Well, as a mental health clinician, I also see this kind of impatience in clients who want to hurry up and get through counseling, you know, because after all, they just want to feel better. And I get that. I understand that. And yet, how many times, you know, I feel like I have to reassure them that their psychological, emotional, and spiritual healing simply cannot be rushed, because their healing must be complete. Still, some people believe they're doing something wrong because they do not see the changes fast enough. Am I doing this right? Am I asking right the right questions? Am I, like, what else do I need to do? They don't need to do anything more than what they're already doing, because healing, integration is taking place. Transformation is inevitable. And it's true, many people just want to feel better and as quickly as possible, absolutely. But truth be told, healing takes time. Integration takes time. Transformation takes time. In fact, many times a person's spiritual growth often occurs as they are engaged in an unlearning learning stage. And this is what I mean. You know, people will need to unlearn assumptions about the world, or assumptions about God, or how God should work for them. Or perhaps people will need to unlearn unhealthy habits or other behaviors that have led them down just a very unhealthy mental, emotional, or spiritual path. And for some, they're going to need to let go of, you know, roles that they took on that have created certain dysfunctions in the family. And still, others will need to unlearn sabotaging behaviors based on relationship wounds that they suffered in the past. And yet, all the while people are unlearning these and other unhealthy aspects, they're also going to need to relearn and reclaim those life-giving aspects of themselves. Because if there's one thing that I hope you take away from this program tonight, it's this. The more faithful we are to life-giving mental, emotional, physical, and spiritual integration, sooner or later, life-giving transformation will occur. And a key ingredient for any spiritual integration is the element of hope, especially when it comes to making sense of our lives. And there's a great quote that I read once by Thomas Merton. He was a Trappist monk, that captures the essence of hope that is needed along a spiritual journey. And he writes about this in his work, Seize the Day. He writes, "I have no idea where I am going. I clearly do not see the road ahead of me. I cannot know for certain where it will end, nor do I really know myself. And the fact that I am following your will, O Lord, does not mean that I'm actually doing so. But I believe that the desire to please you does in fact please you. And I hope I have that desire in all that I am doing. I hope that I will never do anything apart from that desire. And I know that if I do this, you will lead me by the right road, though I may know nothing about it. Therefore, will I trust you always, though I may seem to be lost and in the shadow of death. I will not fear, because yes, you are ever with me, and you will never leave me to face my perils alone." And what Merton is saying here is that he doesn't really need to see where his life is going, because that's not where his hope lies. But rather, his hope lies squarely in the relationship that he has with God. But I believe that that desire to please you does in fact please you. And I hope I have that desire in all that I am doing. And I hope that I will never do anything apart from that desire. I love that section. You know, there's an old saying that we can live about 30 days without food. We can live about 3 weeks without water. And we can live about 3 minutes without oxygen. But we cannot live 3 seconds without hope. Hope is that powerful. Hope is that transformative in us and through us. But the true lesson is that we need to examine, what do we place our hope in? Because, you know, if there was ever a group of people who exemplifies hope on a daily, practical basis, it's people who farm. That's right, the farmer. Think about it. They till the soil, they remove the rocks and other obstacles that would get in the way of having a healthy crop. Then they plant seed and cover it back up with soil, and all of this is done by faith, in the hopes that with sun and water and nature's fertilizer, the seed will produce wonderful crops. Everybody needs hope. It's just part of us, something ingrained in us from birth and how we see the world. But what we hope in and in what we hope for can either bring us misery or it could bring us peace. And many people still out there are taught that material things will bring happiness and contentment. And there, you know, there's really nothing wrong with material things, because we all need food, we all need clothing, shelter, security, achievements, essential accomplishments, goals, and so on and so forth. But I sit down with a lot of people who, by all outward appearances, have it all together, but they are totally miserable on the inside. True, money doesn't necessarily buy you happiness, and it certainly doesn't quell some of the storms that rage inside of us. Which, again, brings us back to the analogy of roses. Have you ever watched a rose bush during a storm? You know, they take a beating. They really do. The branches, you know, are swaying back and forth by the wind, and the petals are being stripped away by the pounding rain and wind. And as the storm continues, it doesn't look like the rose bush will survive. And after the storm has passed, it looks all pitiful and gnarly, and there's really nothing left to it. But beneath the surface, deep within the earth, that rose bush is alive and well, because it is firmly anchored. Life is continuing, even in the dead of winter, when all the flowers and the fruit trees seem to die, there is still life going on underground. And it's in the timing and by God's grace that we will see the shoots come up again in the spring, and they will bud, they will blossom, and bear its fruit and fragrance for everybody to enjoy. The life of any plant or flower is definitely in its roots. And the healthier the soil, the stronger the roots, the more life continues. But I don't know, have you ever tried to tear out the roots of a rose bush? All I can say is good luck with that one, because those roots go down about 3 feet, and then they spread out about 3 feet all around. And this is why rose bushes can weather the most severe storms. And they're going to come back year after year after year, because they have strong roots. Well, I would really love to hear your heart on this matter. So again, if you would like to call in, that number is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And I'll be taking your calls after the break. Again, You are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity, and I'm your host, Dr. James Houck. Be back with you in 1 minute. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Dr. James Houck, and you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. Again, I just would like to just express my gratitude, my appreciation for everybody who is spends this hour with me every other Wednesday night. Thank you for your responses. Thank you for your comments and suggestions. I am truly, truly grateful. And again, I just wanted to say thank you for that. Well, we've been talking about the first part of the show, we've been talking about the root, the shoot, and the fruit, as you will, as it applies to our spiritual growth. And I started off the broadcast today with a story about how a young student tried to force open a budding rose to bloom, you know, before it was even ready. And perhaps much in the same way that he wanted to hurry up and force his own spiritual growth. It just, he wasn't ready. And how often we want to be in a hurry up because we believe we're not growing fast enough. But it's not about how fast we grow, but rather how strong our roots are. When we have strong spiritual roots and are faithful to the process of integration of our truth with our personal experiences and God's grace, transformation and growth will occur. You've heard me say it once, I'll say it again. It is inevitable. Even in the budding stage, we are growing. And if we are faithful to integrating our spiritual practices and our experiences along with our daily awareness of truth and God's grace, like I said, transformation is inevitable. It is going to happen. And I also see this in the mental health work that I do, the people I work with who want to heal from their PTSD or other traumatic incidents. That whenever a person suffers from a traumatic experience or a tremendous loss of some kind, they often sit and they wonder, rightly so, will I ever be able to put these pieces back together? How do I start? Where do I start? I feel like my life has just been shattered. My heart has been broken. And what will my life look like once the pieces go back together? And will I ever feel alive once more? Now, I don't get down on my, you know, one good knee and sing a verse from Little Orphan Annie, and like the sun will come out tomorrow. You know, the physical, psychological, emotional, and spiritual healing is not a pie in the sky, Pollyanna way of looking at life. It's just not. But instead, it's a promise that following every storm in our lives, that sun will come out again. Healing will occur. And we're going to find our life and strength because our spiritual roots are anchored to relationships that are eternal and not temporal. Well, you know, summer is often a time when couples want to get married, and certainly love is in the air. And if you're like me, you've attended many, many marriages, many weddings. And the most requested scripture that people would like to have read in their ceremony is often taken from the book of 1 Corinthians, chapter 13. Okay, they were straight out of the Bible. It's called the love chapter. Perhaps you've heard it. It says love is patient, love is kind. It doesn't envy, it doesn't boast, it's not proud. Love does not dishonor others. Love is not self-seeking, it's not easily angered. Love keeps no records of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but it always rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Love never fails. But where there are prophecies, they will cease. Where there are tongues, they will be stilled. And where there is knowledge, it will pass away. For we know in part, we prophesy in part, but when completeness comes, what is in part disappears. And now these three remain: faith, hope, and love. But the greatest of these is love. Perhaps this is why, when it comes to expressing our love, roses are the most appropriate flower. My favorite rose is a yellow rose. My wife prefers red roses, and I also prefer tiger lilies, but that's just me. I have many flowers that I'm just fond of. I just think their beauty is just phenomenal. And this 13th chapter of 1 Corinthians is often read at weddings because it symbolizes a love that weathers life's most severe traumas, disappointments, death, and tragedy. And love also is there when we celebrate births, weddings, graduations, major accomplishments, and so forth. And yet, how is it that love is the strongest out of faith and hope? Faith and hope are strong in our lives. But what is it about love? In fact, more importantly, what is it about God's unconditional love for us that is the strongest? Well, the answer is because unconditional love sees the potential for people to become far greater than who they see in the present moment. Love certainly sees the possibility of people to heal from their emotional, psychological, physical, and spiritual woundedness. Because indeed, love is patient, love is kind. When you have love, it seeks to honor other people's first, and the only records it keeps is the life-giving moments in our lives, because love always rejoices with the truth. And love certainly protects, it trusts, it hopes, it always perseveres. Love's able to do this because it teaches us not to look at the temporary things in our lives, but instead focus on the potential for hope, healing, grace, and that inner joy. Or as Henry Nouwen, another theologian, puts it, the reason why God's love is unconditional is because it existed before any kind of rejection was possible, and that it would still be there after all rejections have taken place. In other words, it's unconditional. It's there, it's continuous, it's eternal. It's the first and everlasting love of God, who is both Father and Mother. It's a foundation, it's a fountain of all human love. And in the Gospels, Jesus's whole life and message was to reveal this inexhaustible, unlimited, motherly, fatherly love of God, as well as to show us how to let that love guide every part of our lives. Rose bushes and roots are a great reminder for us of our own spiritual growth. As with any example of vegetation, once the seed is planted in the soil, the roots have to go down and anchor themselves firmly before any appearance of life appears above ground. Because without a strong root system or a foundation, the life of a rose bush is limited, because storms will come and pull up the entire thing. You know, and if any of you recall, you know, storms with its wind and rain can lift up entire trees, lift up entire houses, but can certainly lift up entire trees. And to what and to whom we are spiritually rooted makes all the differences in the world. And as I've said many times in these broadcasts, that when it comes to the integration of mental health and spirituality, it always comes back to relationships. And the irony of life is that we often experience our psychological, emotional, physical, and spiritual wounds being in relationships. But in order for us to truly heal and grow, we find our healing in healthier relationships. And it all begins with a relationship with ourselves. Well, as I talked about a couple of weeks ago, that because we're so connected with each other, in fact, we're so connected to all things, that when we wound another person, we end up wounding ourselves. And when we, you know, and when others wound us, I should say, it's as if they have wounded themselves. And this is a fact that we cannot get around. This is a truism, which is all the more reason why we need to stay connected in healthier relationships with ourselves and others and God or the divine. Okay. And it's the beginning of August, and we have some time before we get into the holidays. And when we think holidays, we think of family. When we think of families, we think of who said what to so-and-so last year, or what 4th of July arguments that would never have healed, or what happened last Easter. And as I sit with a lot of couples and individuals, as we start talking about, it's never too soon to start thinking about the holidays, not in terms of what you're going to buy and what you're going to serve and things like that, but who do you need to make amends with? Who do you need to forgive? Who do you need to ask forgiveness from? Who do you need to express gratitude for? Who do you need to say, I love you? These are the things that are really important, because they bring us clearly back into relationships, and they have that strength and that capacity to restore broken relationships. Because it really doesn't matter who took the last roll at Easter. It really doesn't matter who said what to who and who, you know, so and so and so forth. You know, it's just relationships are that important, especially with family relationships. It all begins with the relationship that we have with ourselves. Are we able to forgive ourselves for things that we have said, or things that we have done that we're not proud of? And just to be honest, it all begins with the relationship with ourselves. There's a story that Jesus once told his disciples about, the need to be firmly rooted in their connection with him. It's the story of the vine and the branches. It's found in John's gospel in the 15th chapter. And by this analogy, Jesus says to his disciples, he goes, I am the vine and you are the branches. That whoever abides in me and I in him will bear much fruit, because without me, you can do nothing. If anyone does not abide in me, he is cast out as a branch, and it is withered, and then they'll all be gathered up and thrown into the fire, and they are burned. But if you abide in me, then my words abide in you, You will ask what you desire, and it shall be done for you. By this my Father is glorified, that you bear much fruit. And certainly there's more to this parable. There's more to this teaching. You know, I only read a brief passage here. But what I find interesting, that within the entire 9 verses, the word abide, or in some translations, remain, appears 8 times. 8 times in 9 verses. That's pretty significant. And that's something worth paying attention to. Remain in me. Abide in my words. Whoever remains in me will bear much fruit. And what's being said here is that just as the branches cannot produce the flowers or the fruit unless it remains connected to the vine and its roots, so too do we need to remain connected to our spiritual roots. Even if you cannot make sense of what you see and hear and feel above ground, so to speak, rest assured that there is life in you, because your roots are firmly anchored in the soil. Never, ever, ever give up on the ability of God's grace to work in and through your life. Even if you do not feel you're making enough spiritual progress to suit you, remember the story of the master, his student, and the rose. By forcing ourselves to go faster, without proper integration and through God's grace, we're going to end up making a mess of things. But if you have strong spiritual roots that are anchored firmly in your relationship with God or the divine, you will see your wonderful hachaitas, your wonderful thisness, your wonderful uniqueness emerge that will be a blessing and healing for all relationships. Yes, you've come into this world already equipped and graced with everything you need for this life. And just because you cannot see your giftedness yet doesn't mean that it's not in there. It is. It's in you. And yet, if you're not at peace with your spiritual progress, send your roots deeper into your relationship with God. Ask to be seen, or to be shown, I should say, your giftedness, your skills, your talents, your strengths, your character traits, and so forth. God is certainly faithful, and all God asks of us is to remain connected. Find that uniqueness of that which you have brought into this world. For you all have this hachaitas, you all have this speciality, you all have this unique relationship. No two people are alike. Everybody is gifted. Everybody has character traits. Everybody has skills, and so on and so forth. I'm Dr. James Houck, and you have been listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. Thank you for spending this hour with me. And again, if by some reason you were unable to spend the full hour with me, I invite you to visit the website, www.bbsradio.com/Reclaiming Authenticity, and go back in under the archive section, and in a couple of days you'll be able to listen to this broadcast again, or you might find other broadcasts that you may have missed that you can go back and listen to. Again, invite you to tune in 2 weeks from today, as we are a little bit further along in the month of August, August 16th as it will be, and for another episode of Reclaiming Authenticity. So in the meantime, everybody be safe, everybody behave themselves, and be sure to remain connected and send your spiritual roots deeper, deeper, deeper into relationships. Take care.
For an answer, or just to leave 1,000 comments, or prodding around to buy a book by Dr. Hauk. It's all there. Just wander over to ReclaimingAuthenticity.com and click around. And we'll see you next Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Pacific, on BBS Radio TV.